comes Kene Wongu from the 2 to the right side 20. He's at the 25-30. And Kene Wongu has left the 49ers in the wake of a keen turn of speed. Touchdown! It's a 99-yard touchdown. His second this season by this unstoppable Cyclone. Kene Wongu, 31-26 Niners.
Unstoppable Cyclone. I like that.
That's how I often refer to Paul Allen.
He is an unstoppable cyclone. Fantastic. Fun game yesterday. Unfortunately, our Minnesota Vikings traveled out to the West Coast and fell one game below 500 against the San Francisco 49ers in really a roller coaster of a game. It was, despite the outcome, much like most Vikings games this season, it was a blast to watch. It was very exciting, and it was a lot of fun. Welcome to the show. Host of 9 to Noon, the one and only voice of the Vikings, Paul Allen.
Yeah, it was great if you like ball peen hammers to your thumbs and your pinkies. Your testicles and your nipples pierced unwillingly. I mean, are you a masochist? I mean, you think that was
fun? I like it's, good football games. Yeah. Like back and forth. It's exciting.
It's not easy to, you know, to have the conversations when they lose. Mm-hmm. How is do we know how Dalvin Cook is to start off with?
No, the MRI is today. Generally speaking, when you leave the field on a cart and the entire team exits the bench to be next to you, the on-field intel is that it's not very good. So I'm heading into today, beginning the Lions prep, thinking that it's not very good, and Madison and Wongu will be your 1-2 next week, but that's not confirmed.
Yeah, and in the replay of that hit, you know, that was
which one?
When Dalvin Cook went down.
Not, it was not when punk ass Josh Norman was pounding on the back of Adam Thielen.
Want to get to that, but on Dalvin Cook when he went down and how quickly he seemed like he was in pain, obviously immediately. But I'm glad you brought that up because no one talked about it watching the TV coverage. What was that?
Is that not a flag?
Well, it was embarrassing that one of the officials, and I don't know who it was because I could not catch his number. I'm thinking it was back judge guy, was looking right at it. I mean, Thielen's laying on the ground at the bottom of a pile, and, you know, cornerback Josh Norman, who's been around a long time. In fact, he got in a very, very aggressive in-game fight with Odell Beckham Jr. Within the last 7-8 years when OBJ was with the Giants and Josh was with the Carolina Panthers. So Josh has a little of that to him. I could not believe when official guy ran in and he was looking right at it, that Josh Norman, the cornerback for the Niners, was not ejected. And, you know, I was on the bus waiting for everybody to assemble to head to San Jose Airport and fly back. And I was thinking about, because somebody had tweeted the picture of it, and I was thinking about quote tweeting and being like, my man, I mean, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
You're looking right at it, and there's no ejection. But discretion became the better part of valor from yours truly, because you do things like that, and then all of a sudden, even if you're the announcer and you embarrass an official on social media, you might not get a call the next 20 years.
Not necessarily here or there, but in those last 2 minutes on that last drive, which unfortunately didn't yield the results we hoped. I was just curious, because, you know, again, I'm a casual football watcher, but on a couple of those throws, that looked like pass interference. Like, it looked like the play call at the end just got sloppy. I don't know where you land when it comes to calling out the refs, but it looked like on a couple of those passes, I was like, how did they not call those as pass interference? So, and again, I'm more of a casual watcher, so I don't know the intricacies of how that stuff gets called, but
yeah, that there was a lot of chatter within the inner covenant after the game about the officiating, and I listened to it, and I agree with a lot of things that were shared. The Josh Norman situation is egregious, so I think that merits conversation even into this week to see what the league offices potentially do. But the quarterback regressed to the mean, and Cousins amazingly had gone 349 consecutive passes on the road without an interception. I mean, I've never seen anything like it. 349 consecutive over a year back to Soldier Field last year. But so that's good. And then he's firing and hitting Thielen a couple of times early in the game. And, you know, here we go. But there were a couple of 2-point conversions where he just misfired. And he was just off. Kirk was just off yesterday. And You know, I think obviously when you don't have Dalvin Cook and then your quarterback is misfiring and offense is the identity of your team, that is not a harbinger for good things. Then defensively, without you know, they come into the season thinking their defensive line would be Everson Griffin and Danielle Hunter at end, Dalvin Tomlinson and Michael Pierce in the middle, and none of those four play. So there actually were guys playing yesterday, and God bless them, and best of luck to them for the rest of their careers. But you Vikings fans, raise your hands if you know who T.J. Smith is. Remember Tashaun Bauer, undrafted by us in 2017, Eddie Yarborough. I mean, we were wheeling guys in and out there yesterday where, you know, they were playing out of necessity. And, you know, then when you're facing 67, 69 plays and it's a little warm in Northern California, a lot of guys just wore down, couldn't stop that running game, and it was tough.
Have you heard anything on the status of Everson Griffin? Do you know if he's doing okay? I know he's gone for at least three games, was what I heard. Any update on his status?
No, I am. I texted him yesterday and didn't get a response. Just on the way to the game from San Jose to Santa Clara, sent him a text, thinking about you. Have prayed for you all week, and didn't get a response. Don't know where he is. Hopefully, he's mentally getting himself squared away. Yeah. But I have no idea.
Yeah, love that guy, and love watching him play. And yeah, his presence was absolutely missed during the game yesterday. But more importantly than that, obviously, I hope he's doing okay.
Yeah, likewise. But from a football standpoint, moving forward, without Griffin and Danielle Hunter, you know, now they're using third-round rookie Patrick Jones, who hasn't played much, and he didn't play much yesterday, and he was ineffective. The one of the underlying non-obvious situations from that game yesterday is the 49ers used a right tackle named Tom Compton, and he was with the Vikings in 2018. He's a Rosemount, Minnesota native, went to Rosemount High School. He's been in the league several years, but he hasn't played much. He just doesn't play much. I ain't saying he's that good or whatever, because I don't know what he does out there. They played him the entire game, and the under the surface angle here is, we think we can use anybody at tackle and you're not going to get a pass rush on us without Hunter and Griffin, and using Sheldon Richardson at defensive end for the second game. So I think that bears following as the season goes on, because our DJ Wanham played the best game of his career. Third year Arkansas guy Armin Watts is really coming together well, 96. I think Michael Pierce and Dalvin Tomlinson both have chances this weekend against the Detroit Lions. But it's a winless Lions bunch, you know, but their tackles, Taylor Decker over to the rookie third overall pick, B'nai Sewell, very good tackles. So if you're not going to rush the quarterback with your ends and you have to blitz, anybody can beat you. And they got zapped a few times yesterday via the blitz with old Brandon Ayuk.
Asked you last week about your thoughts at the moment, regardless of the outcome, when they lined up to go for the field goal at the end of the game. You know, obviously a lot of Vikings fans probably got nervous. Curious what your thoughts are, result aside, what your thoughts were at the time when the Vikings could have lined up to take a field goal down by eight late in the game and decided to go for the touchdown on fourth down.
I have no problem with it. When you're on the road, I know it's cliche, but the age-old cliche is you play for a tie at home and you play to win on the road, because situations are adversarial, and it's more difficult to A, get calls to go your way, B, to execute the offense the way you want, because the crowd's all up on you. And they already had scored on a fourth down touchdown early in the game, so the offense had been humming to a certain extent during the course of the game. But you know, from 5-5, and you've lost Dalvin Cook, and you know you're playing with this defensive line with some players that nobody's ever heard of, then you absolutely go for the touchdown, try to get in and tie it with a 2-point conversion. But you know, we went for a couple of twos yesterday, and Cousins overshot Jefferson badly. Then he short hopped Jefferson badly. So Kirk was just off yesterday. And, you know, back to the Packers game, he threw some passes in that game too that were a little dicey. So I think that bears following as we move forward the rest of the season.
Having watched every game this season, perception, I'm curious if you think it's reality. Has the play calling gotten more aggressive in the past few games, or has it been more circumstantial based off of the way the game is being played? And I also want to include some in actual some of the gameplay itself, because I saw some plays yesterday I don't know if trick plays is the way you want to.
Flea flicker?
Yeah, I don't remember seeing much of that early in the season. Is it perception or is that reality?
Well, that was reality when it was thrown to Jefferson, and then he threw it all the way back the other side of the field.
That
I think
was
it
awesome.
Went to Dalvin. Yeah, that was weird when I saw that, specifically at that time of the game. And, you know, it's the team we played, the San Francisco 49ers with Kyle Shanahan, they do a lot of that. And they have this third-year wide receiver running back named Deebo Samuel, who is one of the most dynamic players I've seen in a long time. I started calling him Percy Patterson during the game because he was reminding me of a combo of Percy Harvin and Cordarrelle Patterson.
Yeah.
You know, but why I thought it was weird is it almost had a shoe-size contest thing to it, where it was like, okay, you're going to run this flea flicker, or you're going to run this double pass from Jawan Jennings all the way over the other side of the field. Well, we can do it too. So it was effective, but Justin can throw. So, you know, there are many things you can do with Justin. You can run him out of the backfield, but they generally do that in certain parts of the field. What, you know, we in the business call the alumni zone, where you get to a certain part of the field, the down is good, you can take a shot and kind of be and have some tricks and, you know, kind of be fancy and stuff and impress the quote alumni, end quote. Nevertheless, without Dalvin Cook, you know, you're trying to get that play action to go, per John's question. Yes, the play calling absolutely has become more aggressive the last month and a half, but a lot of it is predicated off the play action to Dalvin and getting single coverage all over the field. They did not get that yesterday. Mm-hmm. The safeties for the Niners, Jaquaski Tartt and Jimmy Ward, they're very, very good. They're two of the better safeties we've seen all season, a week after seeing Adrian Amos and Darnell Savage, and they're both very good safeties too. So it's just easier to do stuff like that, get deep at home, than it is against squared away safeties like those guys. But yeah, they are more aggressive.
From Twitter, one of our listeners, Sean, wrote, and I'm going to read this verbatim. Will one of you please ask Paul Allen if Zimmer should be fired? Even if you don't want Zimmer fired, I want to hear the fireworks resulting from that question.
There are no fireworks. No, there are no fireworks. And it's with all due respect, because it sounds like it was tongue-in-cheek with the tweet. But it's in-season firings. There's a lot that goes into in-season firings. So if you look at head coaches who have been fired in season over the last couple of decades, there generally is insubordination, teams losing by 30, just major, major problems on top of problems that do not involve Jefferson throwing to Cook. Do I go for a field goal or a touchdown? We've given up 60 some odd points right in front of halftime. I mean, those are all things that need to bear following. But there's you don't to fire somebody in season. I mean, it's such a tired angle and lazy angle a lot of people have taken over the last month and a half, because what they're not realizing is to fire somebody during the course of the season, you are willing to concede you're okay embarrassing somebody. Somebody who has given you 8 good years, has taken you to the NFC title game, has been a bastion of excellence off the field, and is very well respected within the building. So, you know, I've dealt with this over about the last month and change on the radio show. I don't mix it up on Twitter with stuff like this, but it's tired. It's just, you know, whatever transpires with an organization, a company, a business, a football team, whatever, after the season, that's different than in the season. You fire somebody in season, you're just conceding that we want you gone so badly that we are willing to embarrass you publicly. So just listen to the way I phrase that. Is we want you around so little, we're willing to embarrass you publicly within your profession. My God. I mean, seriously, think it out for a second, okay?
Like, what's your take on the clock management situation with the Vikings? Every week it seems like, you know, especially after losses, obviously, it seems like there's some criticisms of the coaching staff's handling of the clock later in the game. Is that a real issue, or is that something that is being blown up by sort of the loud voices on the social media?
Well, there have been situations this year where, you know, I've wondered what was happening with the clock, and, you know, there was a really, really weird play at the end of the game where Cousins had run all the way out to, in essence, to the right where a receiver would line up, like slot right. And then he ran back and he erroneously lined up behind right guard Ole Udo, because it was just a frenzy. I mean, everybody went pear-shaped and they had used a timeout. So when situations like that transpire, you know, it leads to head scratching, but it's just so, and it's fine for fans to second guess because that's just for it's an age old situation with passion and loving and loathing.
Fans do.
Right. But it certainly beats no commentary at all, which leads to apathy, which means nobody's coming to your games and nobody's buying your jerseys and everybody's going broke. So when it comes to second guessing like that, the cliched armchair quarterback, I don't have a problem with it. But it's when people just generalize and say clock management. I mean, that's a specific situation where I would need to hear examples and then think back to it. And how much time do you have left? How many timeouts do you have left? What's the score? But there have been situations this year where I definitely have scratched my head and my eyebrow has been raised.
This season, just more of a comment. This season reminds me a lot when I watch my, you know, I watch my NASCAR every year, and you get these teams and they're really, really fast teams and they got great cars. They just can't put the race together. They just, there's something that takes them out right at the end, you know, and you look back at their season and you go, man, they were fast all year long, but they just could not, there was always something click. They couldn't get it to click.
It's a good metaphor, because if you just think to yesterday from a car racing standpoint, not having Michael Pierce and Dalvin Tomlinson against a run first team is basically like working without your front left and your back right wheel. And then Dalvin Cook goes down. He's carted off the field. It's a very emotional situation. Now you've lost your engine.
Seemed like it just took the wind out of the sails. That's right. Perception wise.
Right. So the team now, you know, without some of the wheels and without the engine, instead of it being a high profile car race, it became demolition derby.
Yeah.
And we were the one facing that big fat truck with those big fat wheels, and we got trucked.
So what do we see looking forward?
We have the Lions. They're winless. If the team looks at it,
I don't like that. I don't like that.
I don't like winless teams.
I do not like winless teams this late in the season.
Are dangerous.
If the Minnesota Vikings look at this like 2 a.m. ugly light slump buster, they're going to lose. Because from 5-6, you know, just to get into the playoffs would be super cool. And yesterday was a winnable game. I thought it was really like 54% to 46% from a Niner standpoint. But they'll be favored against the Lions. They should win. Short week after that, they come home and they play Pittsburgh on that wretched Thursday night piece. I hate Thursday night games, not just because it's 3 games in 10 days. You know, you go to San Francisco, then you go to Detroit, then you got a short week at home against the Steelers. But the games are bad, and players just cannot get ready physically at this stage of the season for a Thursday night game. So it's a money grab. I don't watch Thursday night football, not out of principle, but simply because the games are bad. So they have that on the horizon. And then they have the Bears after that at Chicago. They should win all three. If they don't win all three, it'll be an absolute disappointment whether Dalvin plays or Cook plays or not. But they should win their next three games, and that would make them 8-6. And that gets you close to getting into the postseason.
You should be looking at about a 6 or 7 seed at 8-6. You should be in the hunt for it anyway.
Hopefully.
And you think of how few teams have gone winless over the course of an NFL season. It's like the Lions are going to win a game at some point.
That's what they said, like, within the last 8 years or 10 years when they went 0-16.
Yeah, but it's pretty rare for a team to go 0, you know, to drop a big 0 over the course of an entire season.
Well, they also almost beat us here. I mean, we were handling them, and then all of a sudden, it's like 2 minutes and change to go in the game. I'm like, what? You know, they Alexander Mattison dropped the ball at like the 20 or 15. They get in, they get the 2-point conversion, and then we have to go to complete, you know, hair on fire mode to get down the field for Joseph to walk off on them. So they've played us tough. They played the Bears tough. They've played a lot of teams tough this year. They just can't close with that dagger. They probably will one time this year close with that dagger.
Yeah.
And just keep that in mind.
Paul Allen, host of 9 to Noon on our sister station, KFAN. Thanks, always enjoy having you in, man. Look forward to catching up with you after hopefully a W next week.
Miss you, Sam. Bye, Double B.
Coming up, editorial. Maybe this is the whole problem right here in the Star Tribune.
Yeah.
At last, U.S. Bank Stadium must be made safe for birds.
At last.
Maybe we're cursed. from all the deadly birds. We'll get into that next.
segments of your Monday edition of Justice and Drew. Good to be back on the program with you. Sam, out in Las Vegas competing for Miss Rodeo Galaxy Universe something.
I don't think that's it at all.
No.
I don't think that. I don't know. No. I don't know. I don't.
Okay. All right.
Miss Rodeo America.
Sure. Sure. But might as well be Galaxy.
It's because true.
That's how awesome America is.
TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com, the Justice and Drew page. You can go there and you can find out how you can like send her roses and like be a bachelor or something with it.
She can send her roses and emails because she's on a they put all the contestants on some sort of digital lockdown where they take their phones and they can't access the internet throughout the course of the pageant. And the pageant goes on all week, so if you want to send Sam a message of support, you can do that through the links found on our show page at TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com, and you can also buy her a rose if you're so inclined.
It's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, because in no other social circumstance can you just send a stranger flowers, and right. It'd be okay. But now you right. can. This was once-in-a-lifetime.
And it's a potential for you to be engaged. You can get engaged with her, because she gives it back to you or something. When she comes back
to
town,
that's a different show.
I know she likes that show, though.
She does like that show very
quite,
much.
Quite a bit.
Yeah, so that is accurate.
Basically, don't listen to anything that I said.
Go to the Justice and Drew Show page, TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com. You can follow the links there, and that'll get you to the pages you need to if you want to support Sam and her venture to almost win. She's like the Vikings of Miss Rodeo. She wants to almost win.
Yeah, which means she's probably going to win.
Which means she probably will win.
All right, we do have
which makes her not like the Vikings.
We do have another thing. We have a number of things to get to before we wrap up the show today. First off, though, Al in Eden Prairie has been holding for a long time when the talk about Biden's travel bans, and he joins us now. Thank you so much for holding on, Al. We greatly appreciate it, and welcome to Justice and Drew. What are your thoughts this morning?
All that time and Al dropped.
Wow.
Wow.
That was incredible. And I had such an amazing lead up to it, too.
Let's go, Brandon.
What
a bummer.
Boy, that was so like indicative
of my world.
Of so many things in my life right now. I just
I'm so close, and then it just gets snatched away.
All right, we don't have to spend a ton of time on this, although I may make a surprise hot take.
Okay. I like surprise hot takes.
From the Star Tribune, recent testing by the Minnesota Sports Facilities Authority of a bird repellent device at U.S. Bank Stadium.
This is the grape Kool-Aid.
This is the grape Kool-Aid.
The one that smelled like grape Kool-Aid.
Underscores the need for the MSFA to look no further than its own scientific study to solve the deadly problem of birds colliding with glass at the venue. Now, this was written by a handful of individuals. They're a coalition of conservation organizations, including the Audubon Chapter of Minneapolis, Friends of Robert Byrd's Sanctuary, Minnesota Citizens for the Protection of Migratory Birds.
All right. Okay.
They talk about the peer review study. They found that a significant number of migrating birds are killed by the glass each year. We actually have an answer to why this happens, too, Drew. Even based on the understanding of the number of bird collisions and the deaths of the study, the stadium falls in the group of buildings that represent the upper extreme of bird collision rates in the country.
Yes.
The stadium's highly reflective glass in the Mississippi Flyway, a major migration corridor used by millions of birds twice a year, virtually guaranteed the stadium would rank among the top bird-killing buildings in Minneapolis.
Or even the world.
But birds cannot see glass and are killed when they attempt to fly to the reflected trees and sky. Now, I know it doesn't answer the question of why are they not avoiding the other bird.
The one that's flying straight at them.
But I think it's a matter of perspective where they're not realizing that it's them until it's too late.
Yes.
They are birds, after all.
Their brains are very small.
No. Yes. Audubon Minnesota's final study report identified glass retrofit options that have been tested and approved by the American Bird Conservancy and endorsed by the bird collision experts across the country. Okay, so, and they get into a lot of the pesticides they used and the other things that they were talking about, but it looks like they're circling back around to the etchings of the glass. Healthy bird populations provide people with many benefits, including pollination, pest control, seed dispersal, and ecotourism. Okay, I don't know about all that, but birds you know, don't need to needlessly die. So I think you can just stick with that.
You just stick with that,
right?
You don't need to kill birds just for no reason, willy nilly.
Environmental indicators, birds informative about changing ecosystems. Okay, fine,
whatever.
And beyond their use to us, birds have intrinsic value that we have an ethical obligation to protect. Okay, fine,
whatever.
I think
sure.
They're trying too hard on the solution. Just put a goalpost outside of the stadium; they'll go wide left every time.
Rather than spend public funds on testing products that don't solve the problem of migrating birds colliding with the stadium glass, it's time for the MSFA to finally implement science-based methods to make the stadium safe for birds. Adding visual markers to the glass is possible while retaining the stadium's architectural integrity and aesthetics. In fact, based on other experiences at other sites, many visitors to the stadium probably would not even notice. And I guess in terms of the cost, I mean, this is something that could be absorbed within the MSFA budget already and not have to be funded further by taxpayers.
I have wondered, beyond the cost, I have wondered and been curious as to what the resistance is, because I've heard this for a while now. You can etch the glass or put a coating over the glass in a certain way that makes it less reflective, and birds will notice it and not and be less likely. It's not going to eliminate it entirely, but less likely to fly into it. And at the initial thought, when the stadium first went up, we had a lot of these debates, and the MSFA and the Vikings basically cited cost as the reason not to do that. But it's been several years now, and I'm sure that they've made enough money on the stadium. The budget is there for the MSFA. So I don't know. I'm having a difficult time understanding why they're still being kind of stubborn about this and not just implementing the changes to the glass that they need to implement to kill less birds.
Yeah, and that's kind of my hot take. It's like I'm kind of on board with it.
Yeah.
Let's just
do it.
Let's just fix the glass.
Just do it.
Maybe that's been our problem all along. Maybe the birds have cursed us. Maybe
we fix the glass.
Yeah.
We kill less birds.
We can put a game together.
More games.
Let's not fix the glass. That-
Shut up, Packers fan.
Oh, I forgot. About that.
Yeah, fake salmon there is a Packers fan.
Forgot about that.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Not sorry.
That Aaron Rodgers may make a name for himself one day.
He's okay. he's all right. He's got potential.
Yeah. That State Farm commercial is kind of funny.
Yeah, he's good in those. Yeah, maybe he should just stick to those.
Two Minneapolis Best Buys robbed on Black Friday as flash mob thievery spreads beyond California. CNN analyst, and we have the audio, has no idea what's behind the smash and grab robbery wave before then supplying the actual answer.
Let's bring in CNN senior law enforcement analyst and former Philadelphia Police Commissioner Charles Ramsey. Charles, you just heard Christine's report there. These attacks are so brazen. And of course, today is a big shopping day. But what is law enforcement supposed to do about this? Because we haven't really seen a lot of arrests being made after these attacks are happening. So what are they supposed to do in response?
A few years ago in Philadelphia, we had something very similar taking place where we had people, mostly teenagers, younger adults, participate in things like this. Many of the young people that we arrested had no previous criminal records. And why they were getting involved in something like this, I have no idea. And so I don't know what's driving all this, but it is of concern, and it will continue. It's not that.
Justice and Drew, Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. I fear for when we get back from Christmas vacation. Based off
a couple
of
days off,
what's happened?
Our cadences are
just,
all
just
off.
Like just can't read each other. We're out of. I feel like the Vikings right now. I'm sorry. I feel
missing our Dalvin Cook.
It's true. I feel like the second half of a Vikings game.
Right.
I'm just the Alexander Madison for this show.
That's a bit much. You're not quite at Alexander Madison levels yet. You get there.
All right. Got a couple of things to get to before we wrap up the show today. We were talking about U.S. Bank Stadium and the conservationists wanting to change the glass so the less birds die. You know, if it doesn't cost the taxpayers any more money than we've already spent on U.S. Bank Stadium, then I'm completely fine to save some birds, you know?
Sure.
If it's, and I think they're right. I don't think anybody is going to notice. Now, I will say, the moment that we go to etching the glass, you know it's going to turn into. It's going to turn into, well, we need to get artists to go up there and put up woke art.
Oh, God.
Right? No, yeah, so it just needs to be...
No! Kill the birds.
Patterned etching that has no symbolism or meaning.
No.
Just...
No, that won't happen,
just
no, sorry, birds.
Yeah,
gotta go.
It's gonna be. You're gonna get a fist etched in to the glass. Is what you're gonna get.
Mike in Clearwater, go ahead.
Yeah, I have a solution for the killing of the birds. All you need to do is put wind turbines right in front of CenturyLink Stadium, and then the Star and Tribune won't care one bit about it because wind turbines kill tens to hundreds of thousands of birds every year, and no one really cares.
It's true.
And then on another, the same thing, change them all to solar panels. And then what they can do, because birds, same thing happens with solar panels, tens of thousands of birds die landing on solar panels, get fried, then they can open up a fried chicken venue.
Brilliant!
And sell cheap fried right. chicken.
You were doing good there, Mike. You were doing good there, and he kind of lost us.
Okay. All right, bye now.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate your call.
Before we dive into the smash and grabs, I know we have a couple of phone calls here. I'm getting a little bit of breaking news. Have you seen this yet from CNBC?
Jack Dorsey?
Yeah, Jack Dorsey expected to step down from Twitter.
Yeah, Jack Dorsey's quitting Twitter.
Yeah,
now, can he take the website with him?
Yeah, can he take Twitter?
Shut it down?
Yeah, and Mark Zuckerberg?
You take us, Jack and Mark, and all your websites just go away?
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be great.
I have no idea what any of that means.
I haven't really looked into it.
I have no idea if it means anything at all.
It was just breaking over the course of the last break. Jack Dorsey stepping down as Twitter CEO. Obviously, there will be a lot more commentary on that throughout the day, and we'll probably have something to say about it on tomorrow's show. We'll see. Got a few people that want to chime in on the smash and grabs, too. We'll get to your calls in just a moment.
The Burnsville Police Department says that a group of 20 to 30 people entered a Best Buy location near Burnsville shortly after 8 p.m. They stole electronics and fled before police arrived. No one displayed a weapon. No injuries were reported. Maplewood police say 10 to 12 adults and children stole multiple high-value items at a Best Buy near Maplewood Mall around 10 p.m. They were gone by the time police arrived. Maplewood officials say televisions, tablets, and hoverboards were stolen. They're not real. And are working to assess whether the group is connected to the other thefts in the metro. My just gut reaction is that they are. These are organized groups, and they are targeting these locations at specific times to divide and conquer. You know, and just what? And again, I know it's Best Buy, and I'm not like Best Buy. I'm crying over Best Buy, but I like Best Buy. But man. After all the nonsense that you had to go through for COVID,
I know.
And now you got to deal with this garbage. You can thank allowing of riots and the justification from cable news leftists talking heads. You can thank the decriminalization of low level crime. You can thank Democrats for this.
You can thank Keith Ellison. You can thank all the prosecutors that have been appointed by Democrats that do not prosecute.
Anti-police narrative.
Yep. Look,
all of it.
Yeah, there are specific reasons why this is happening, and those specific reasons are more or less tied to the Democrat Party and areas where the Democrat Party has had generational control are the areas where you're seeing these types of things happen. And as long as they continue to just chalk it up as shoplifting, they're not going to do anything about it.
No.
They're not going to do a damn thing about it until businesses actually start packing up shop and leaving. Until the business community, and I'm talking about like the corporate business community, not your mom and pops, until the corporate business community, your targets, your Best Buys, your CVSs, your Walgreens, your Nordstroms, all of these places start to collectively get together and put some damn pressure on these elected officials, especially these Democrat elected officials that to do something about this, or else they're going to just leave. They're going to pack up shop and leave town, and they're not going to open up any more stores in your area. I don't think anything's going to change.
Yeah.
Let's get to a few calls here. Mike in Minneapolis, go ahead.
Hey.
Hey, Mike.
I've got a good idea for the smash and grabs. I think what they should do, anyone that drove a vehicle there, if they catch them, they should keep that vehicle, seize it, and they should also pull their license for 3 years for using a car for a crime. They also should seize any phones so that they can track how the games are or the gangs are organizing.
Yeah, but that's all predicated on catching them.
Yeah.
And that's the problem right now is this is incredibly hard to catch.
Yeah.
Let's go to Leland in Minneapolis. Go ahead. Leland.
Hello.
I was saying that if they have a certain amount of money that they're stealing, if five robbers steal something, they don't separate it and say, oh, well, it's not a felony because there were five of you. Mm-hmm. It's an overall group heist, so the sum of the items stolen should qualify it for a felony because it wasn't individuals that stole it. It was a group that stole it, which would put it in a felony area. And then when they do catch someone, have them plea bargain to rat out the other ones to say, okay, we're going to charge you with a felony because tens of thousands of dollars were stolen.
Yeah.
So if you don't tell us who these other people are, we're going to charge you with everything, whereas you might be able to get off or whatever if you let us know who the organizers were and how you're doing this. And because they did catch a few of them in California.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
They got to do whatever they can do to catch these individuals. Start now. But you got to stop with the misdemeanor stuff.
Yep.
Because five bank robbers don't get reduced down because there were five of them. You only stole 1,000. You only stole 1,000. So it's only a misdemeanor. No, it's a group heist.
Mm-hmm.
These are felonies. These are not misdemeanors.
Yep. You're 100% right. This is not shoplifting. This is not looting. And Narn Fan has a great tweet right here. I'll just read it. This is organized robbery. This is an organized crime.
Yeah.
I mean, when you get that many people in together, and John's speculation is probably spot on, that the two Best Buys that were hit here locally probably was the same group sort of working together. You hit this one, you hit this one. We do it at around the same time. There's no way they'll be able to respond in a fashion to be able to catch all of us. And if they catch one or two of us, you know, that's no big deal because they're just going to get off with a shoplifting misdemeanor at worst.
Switching gears in the time that we have left, the World Health Organization skipped over naming the new variant in the coronavirus, Xi, to avoid causing any cultural, social, national, regional, professional, or any offense to those groups.
To Ginny the Pooh.
So, originally, it was supposed to go Nu, N-U, okay, which came after Mu, M-U, right? So we did have a Mu, and then they skipped the Nu,
mm-hmm.
and then they skipped the G.
Why did they skip the Nu?
Well, they skipped the Nu because they said it was too easily confounded with Nu, as in N-E-W.
Okay.
So they didn't want it to be like, it's the Nu variant.
Right.
Even though it was the Nu variant, they didn't want people to think it was a Nu. You got it.
So, but the name thing doesn't really hold water.
No, it doesn't.
Because Mu, M-U, is a more popular name both around the world and in China than Xi. So all the people that are jumping up to China's defense and to the World Health Organization's defense saying they're just doing it because Xi is as common as John is in America. Xi is that common in China, and you wouldn't want a virus named John, would you? No, that's not the case.
Right.
That's a lie that China's telling and that you're parroting because China is really, really good at spreading propaganda and they don't want a virus named after their chairman, Ginny the Pooh.
Yeah, that's true.
So, you know, so they skipped it out of deference to Chairman Xi. Just call it what it is. Just be honest about it. You skipped it out of deference to the chairman of the Communist China Party. Just be honest about it.
I'd be okay with the John virus. Who cares? You know what?
You know what? I wouldn't.
Freaking John.
I wouldn't.
I've been through, no, not a fan.
I've been through enough, man. I don't need to add virus into the mix of things that mess with my brain. I just, that's not. You got phones to answer in there, Brett. Why don't you get those?
Should have gone with like Tim. Or something.
Why don't you go? Look, I'm with you because I don't think it. I don't care.
Right.
It's not that big of a deal. If you skipped it because you wanted to be respectful to Xi, that doesn't shock me.
If you skipped it out of deference
to
Chairman.
Fine, whatever. I don't get it. In the grand scheme of wokeness, it's not really that big of a deal. I'm more annoyed that it's Omicron and not Omicron.
I know. Add the N.
Put the N in there, people. You're being stupid.
We're going to call it Omicron.
It's Omicron. So, it's a transformer.
You know, don't add us. We know it's Omicron. We're going to call it Omicron because Omicron sounds dumb.
And it kind of is a transformer. It's got like more like spikes and stuff. You know. It's like a new version.
Oh, is it now?
Yeah, that's it's true. It's got new stuff.
Shia LaBeouf is already auditioning for the next movie.
So, to Omicron, okay, As reported on Friday, the Biden administration restricted travel over concern over this. While there have been some extreme reactions, Governor Kathy Hochul out of New York already signed an emergency order for New York State. The symptoms appear to be so different and so mild, though. That's what Dr. Angelique Cotese, the South African doctor who informed the country's vaccine advisory committee, that's what she said to the Telegraph. And look, here's that doctor in her own words.
Looking at the mildness of the symptoms that we are seeing, currently there's no reason for panicking as we don't see severely ill patients. I also checked with the hospital, some of the hospitals in my area. And one of the biggest hospitals, they only have one patient currently that's COVID positive on a ventilator, and they don't even know whether it's COVID, it's Delta or whether it is Omicron related. We acknowledge that it might change going forward. But the hype that's been created currently out there in the media and worldwide doesn't correlate with the clinical picture. And it doesn't warrant to just cut us off from any traveling and ban South Africa as if we are the villains in the whole process. It should not be like that.
Yeah, she went on to say the symptoms were so different and so mild from those I treated before. So on November 18th, four family members all tested positive for COVID-19 with complete exhaustion. She informed the country's vaccine advisory committee. She said in total, about 24 of her patients tested positive for COVID-19. They were mostly healthy men who turned up feeling so tired. About half of them were unvaccinated. We had one very interesting case, a kid about 6 years old with a temperature and a very high pulse rate, and I wondered if I should admit her. But when I followed up 2 days later, she was so much better, said Dr. Cotese. There were some encouraging takeaways, such as the significant portion of those who presented with symptoms of the new variant were unvaccinated, and that the six-year-old patient was better within days. The concerns about the variant also appear to be typical for all other variants, which is that the greatest worry is for the elderly and those who have comorbidities. And listen, if the Biden administration was smart about this, they, one, wouldn't have done the travel ban, because even the WHO was speaking out against that, and two, we don't know about it yet. It doesn't look like it doesn't appear to be any less harmful or any more harmful than the other ones. It may simply be more contagious, and then use it as the encouragement for people to get boosters. I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
Right? I'm
but
fine with that.
But again, encouragement.
Just encouragement.
And no mandates, no coercion, no force, none of that stuff. Just if you're already inclined to get a vaccinated, then here's a reason why you might want to get a booster.
Yeah.
Nothing more than that.
That's it.
Stop stigmatizing people who might make a different choice than you.
Boy, man, the freak out on this on Friday, I thought that this was been like contagion. Like, oh, it's morphed into.
Well, there's people that want that, though. Oh. That's the problem. There's a lot of people out there that want that.
Horrible.
They want to go back to lockdown world. They want to go back to everything happening over Zoom. They don't like this scary new world where people actually interact with each other and go out and have fun.
I don't, and I like to stay home. I don't like those people. I'm not fans of those people. I like my freedom.
We got a Pete Hegseth joining us tomorrow in the 8:35 segment. Also, we'll continue to tell you how you can support Sam and her efforts to become Miss Rodeo of the Galaxy.
Yeah, make sure you head on over to TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com on the Justice and Drew page. A couple of different links there where you can support Sam, and also some new videos that are available as well, including the audio that we just played for you from that South African doctor.
We're back tomorrow, 6 to 9. Have a great day.